I'm Rachel New, and I'm literally on my last legs, like millions of other women all over the world.
We're a different generation of women that have invested time and energy in our health and wellness, and we're really demanding more answers now. We're demanding support, and we're demanding to be heard.
Throughout this series, I'll be exploring how menopause affects most of the population, from women of all ages to their partners and children, and how we can help ourselves when navigating these years.
There is no one specific way to eat. Like in menopause, there's not. If you could literally eat donuts all day long, and as long as you're in a deficit of your calories, you'll lose weight. Should you do that? No.
Amanda Thebe is a fitness and women's health expert and author of Menopocalypse. Amanda Thebe, welcome.
Really happy to be here. Like, I literally am on my last eggs.
Exactly. So I don't know when the last one's going to pop out. I might have to change the name when all the eggs are gone.
Can I just tell you, I'm postmenopausal, turned 50, and I think I was postmenopausal at 48. And I thought, oh, that's it. Like, I'm through the other side, and my ovaries are still cranking out something. I can feel it, you know, it's like I'm not giving in yet.
So I want to talk about your book. I want to talk about Menopocalypse. And it's fabulous. It's very inspiring. We will get to that. But first of all, I just want to ask you about your menopause journey, because like so many people, it did not start with classic symptoms. It started with a symptom that terrified you, that you thought was going to be something completely different from menopause, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I went into this whole experience from a pretty educated standpoint. I've been in the fitness and wellness industry. It's now 3 decades. And, you know, I've specialized in so many different areas of health and wellness, like pre and post pregnancy and senior rehabilitation, all of these different nuances that I have like good understanding of. And so when I was in my 40s, I knew things didn't feel quite great, but I actually was really fit, really healthy, good body weight, all of those things. Like I felt like, all right, I've got this. I know what I'm doing. And then when I was 42, I'd done a particularly strenuous workout. Like it wasn't an easy one. And at the end of it, I was like, God, I'm knackered. And you know how that feels like when you've done too much, and it wouldn't lift. It just was like, I'm really don't feel good. I actually think I've overdone it. And then it just wiped me out. And I had 2 days in bed after a workout, which is crazy. I had terrible dizziness and vertigo. I started throwing up like all the time, and actually not even being able to walk across the bedroom floor. I was having to like go on my hands and knees. And I was like, wow, I need to like pull back. Something's not right here. And then it sort of fixed itself after a day or two, but then it happened again, like out of the blue with no like trigger that I could put my finger on. Anyway, long story short, for the next 2 years, from 42 to 44, I just had these terrible experiences of feeling unwell. I would lose feeling in my face, right down to my hands. And I was scaring the bejesus out of me. I was like, something's not right here. Saw specialists. I was in Canada at the time. I lived in Canada, really good healthcare system. It's sort of like a hybrid of like the UK and the US. It's sort of nationalized, but with some private elements to it. And anyway, I had really good care. The doctors desperately wanted to help me, but never did. I couldn't get to the root cause of what was going on. By the time 2 years came around, I'd also was struggling with depression, which I also didn't recognize. I just thought I was a miserable cow.
And well, no wonder, because you were having all these episodes, all this terror, and you were worried about everything, and everything conflates into everything else, doesn't it?
It does. It conflates. And I also think it also is a non-symptom as well. I hated my husband, hated my kids, hated my life. Like, it was all crap, but I didn't recognize that was depression. I literally was like, you know, ER. I just had this impending gloom and doom about me, which is definitely not my normal sort of personality. And anyway, it just was a chance meeting at my annual exam with my gynecologist, and he was walking out the door and he said, is everything okay? And so I started crying like you do when you go to the doctors. And I went, it's not actually, and I'm really worried. And he literally validated everything and just said, listen, these are very well-known symptoms of perimenopause. You're not going crazy. You really are experiencing these, and I can help you. And that was literally the start of going down the perimenopause rabbit hole. And at the time when I was 42, I'd never heard the term perimenopause. Anyway, so I just was like, this is terrible. I'm in an industry that promotes health and wellness. I specifically talk about women's health and wellness all the time. And I always have been an advocate of that. Yet there was this massive gap in my knowledge base. So I assumed it would be a massive gap in most women's knowledge base as well.
So did you go down the HRT route?
So when I was 42, I was one of those people that had that like belief that HRT equals breast cancer. It's the first place I went. So he was a forward-thinking gynecologist, completely up to date on the research, and said, the thing that you need is hormone replacement therapy. And I was like, no way, you're trying to kill me off. And he said, okay, if you're not happy going down that route, I can prescribe you antidepressants, which will obviously help with your depression, but the off-label benefits of these can help with some menopause symptoms, like the vasomotor symptoms of hot flashes, of which I've never had actually, surprisingly, but I took those and actually they did give me quality of life back. I am not antidepressants, you know, they are a valid treatment source for lots of women in addition to HRT or instead of HRT. It really is about choice, right? It's all about what you decide you want to do to help yourself. I mean, my stance on HRT has definitely changed, and it actually changed within a year of taking antidepressants, because I just wanted to know what the truth was. And it's so difficult to find the truth. It's still really hard to find the information, and the fear still does exist.
You talk a lot about nutrition. I've wanted to get a nutritionist or someone to talk about nutrition on the podcast a lot, because I think it's super, super important in menopause. And I'm a vegan, which I haven't mentioned on the podcast yet. I certainly don't want to ram my views on food and my views on veganism down anybody's throat at all. However, I believe that dairy is probably really not a good thing in menopause. And I also believe that eating as many vegetables and beans and legumes and stuff as I do is probably doing me well in my menopause. So I'm interested to speak to you about nutrition, and having read your book, you know, I know that you have a very sensible and broad view on nutrition, I would describe it as. You know, you have some core values, but it's not like, you know, cut out carbs and, you know, fasting and, you know, what I would call faddy stuff. And because the thing about nutrition, it is that simple thing of you got to take in less calories than you burn.
That's a great place to start, because people argue that essentially is calories in, calories out. People argue that that is not valid, right? People will argue, and I'll take them on. You like literally bite me, because that is law. That's actually the law of nutritional science. The laws of thermodynamics are your energy balance. And if your energy balance, if you keep like the calories in and the calories out, think of a seesaw. If you keep them sort of in an equilibrium, I'm obviously doing it with my hands and this is a podcast, but you know, I think of this in that equilibrium.
So you're gonna put a sound effect of a seesaw going.
Especially the ones in the Northeast that never got oiled. Yeah. Well, that balance, that energy balance will keep you maintaining. You won't put weight on, you won't lose it. And of course, weight fluctuates. We know that that's normal and healthy, but you know, that's essentially what it is. And then if you obviously tip the scales one way and you have too many calories going in, then that's when the weight gain will go on. And if you tip the scales the other way, the seesaw the other way, and you consume less calories and you burn more calories, you're going to lose weight. That's sort of how it works. How you get there is a whole other matter, right? And that's where people will say, well, you have to do keto or you have to do intermittent fasting because it's going to improve your inflammation, et cetera, et cetera. I've even heard things like dirty keto or clean keto. And I'm just like, my eyeballs are aching. I'm rolling them in the back of my head all the time. There is no one specific way to eat. Like in menopause, there's not. If you could literally eat donuts all day long, and as long as you're in a deficit of your calories, you'll lose weight. Should you do that? No. Will it work? Yeah. And you'll feel like shit and it's a really terrible idea. But essentially that's, you know, how it works. Now, going down to sort of like your, like the fact that you said you're a vegan, well, to me, veganism is an ideology, not a diet. And I think that people who say that they're vegan and put it in the food group category, it's not the right conversation to be having, because it's not just the food you're eating, it's the ethics and the morals that you believe and hold dear to you that matter, right? So if people want to be more focused on plant-based eating, then you're going to get a massive thumbs up from me. So let's sort of like break down the macronutrients. Macronutrients come into three elements. You've got protein, you've got carbohydrates, and you've got fats. I'm not really going to talk about fats here because we do consume enough fats. As human beings, it tends to be very easy because if you're a meat eater, you get it in your meat all the time. You normally don't need to add it. If you're more plant-based vegan, you tend to add it in your olive oils and your avocados. They're there, right? We don't really need to hunt them out. As much as we do our proteins and our carbohydrates. So proteins, during menopause, our protein requirements increase. We need to focus on finding protein at every meal. The daily recommendations based on research have showed that in menopause, those daily recommendations are not enough. So essentially, you want to be trying to eat between 1.5 to 2 grams per kilogram of body. So if you're a 60 kilogram weight female, you want to be having between 100 and 120 grams of protein a day. Research also backs up eating that throughout the day and not in one go, because obviously our body doesn't store protein. It's not that like we have to keep like topping it up, and finding that protein throughout the day will stop those dips in the sugar, you know, where we get that like low glycemic hit and hypoglycemic and we need to eat the muffins, you know, like we need to like maintain protein throughout the day so that we just feel satiated. It actually fills us. That along with fiber are the two ways you can sort of like ensure that your body stays sort of like content and full and satisfied. Protein can be found in meats, lean meats, fish. It's also in vegetables. It's also in legumes. It's basically in everything that you consume as a plant eater. If you only eat plants, then you're going to find that your protein, intake is going to be harder to find, and it's also going to be more prone to carbohydrates. You're going to have a heavier carbohydrate diet, and that's fine too. It's just that you may need to supplement maybe with some shakes, or you know, you can get loads of like protein smoothie stuff for vegans, and sometimes the B12 and choline elements are missing in your diet as well. That's all I would say is like look out to supplement those. If you a lot of vegans tend to not have a healthy diet. Veganism doesn't equal healthy often.
No, but
if you are vegan and you're trying to be healthy, then look out for your B12 and your choline, which helps the blood brain barrier, and they're helpful. Carbohydrates come from plants. Carbohydrates are the ones that people say are evil, and I absolutely hate the message that carbs are bad for you, carbs are evil. I mean, you literally are a carb lady. I'm sat talking to a carb lady. I talk about carbs in like loads of different ways. I don't like to have morality around food personally. I don't like to say something is good and something's bad. It shouldn't be like that. You literally should be able to eat what you choose to eat and support your health at the same time. But some carbs are high value, and some carbs, somebody told me this yesterday, are more like your fun carbs. You want to be looking for your high value carbohydrates, the ones that are really nutrient dense, the ones that have got all of the fiber, the micronutrients, all your vitamins, your minerals, and those, you know, phytonutrients as well. Fruit is amazing. Vegetables are amazing. Grains are amazing. So like, look for those, look for your legumes and get those in your diet, right? The fun stuff, the fun carbs, you need to limit. Our body literally can't cope with them like it used to. Menopause changes our sensitivity to how it processes fructose. And so we need to like really think about limiting the muffins we eat, the cookies we eat, the biscuits we eat. Like if you're going to have a hobnob, like think about planning it and maybe only having one instead of five. Like maybe
I love the idea of having a date with a hobnob.
Yeah, like plan it, like make it special. Like, you know, like so I like you literally could prize chocolate out of my cold dead hand. There was no way I was going to try and lose that 10 pound without including like a Ferrero Rocher. I always have a box of Ferrero Rocher and I don't know why. So like I was like, I'm going to have that every day. Why wouldn't I? Like it's my treat. I'll watch telly at night with a big mug of tea and a Ferrero Rocher. And like I think that like we put too much emphasis as women on losing weight in a quick way, in a restrictive way, and in a way that actually causes us distress, instead of looking at a way of losing weight that allows us to eat as much as we possibly can while maintaining this calorie deficit to a moderate degree and not to a degree where we literally could, you know, survive a coma. Like, and then find a way that we actually can enjoy the foods we like, right? And for some reason, we're like, okay, but when I was 20, I would go on 1,200 calorie diet a day, and I would only eat salads, and, you know, and I would just drink like tons and tons of water, and that would like fill me up, and then you would be a mess, but you'd fit in your bikini and it'd be fine because you're in Lanzarote and, you know, you'll drink it all back on. You do that to your body in menopause, you're going to cause so many disruptions. Your body literally can't cope with that type of stress. But yeah, it's the go-to knee-jerk reaction of most women.
Sometimes I think menopausal women should be observed and revered with the same fascination we have for mysterious species from the animal kingdom. Forget the Arctic trek of the mating penguin. What exactly is going on in the brain fog kingdom? Oh, there she is. She's walked into the kitchen with a real sense of purpose. We often see this behaviour in a Homo sapien woman of this age. But look what happens next. She stops, stares, face expressionless. She turns, leaves, and immediately comes back in. Now we see the trademark head scratching, the eyes darting from side to side. She's looking up now, a sign we know to be desperately trying to remember. And she springs forward, opens a cupboard, closes it, opens another, leaves it open, leaves the room, re-enters in a flash, walks straight into the cupboard door. Oh, 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 she's okay. She's just stunned. But wait for it. Wait for it. Yes, there they are, tears of frustration and confusion for this once majestic creature. Right, let's leave the rainforest and head back to Amanda Thebe. I want to talk to you about NEAT. This is one of my favourite things that I learned out of your book.
Yeah, calorie deficit if it's losing weight, focus on protein, introduce strength training and focus on NEAT. NEAT is an integral part of the conversation. And I think lots of women don't know what it is and don't understand the importance of it. So NEAT stands for non-exercise activity thermogenesis. Thermogenesis simply means, and I sort of touched on it, the amount of calories it takes to burn. It's a fuel counter, right? Calories are actually a source of like fuel. What NEAT is all of the work that you do outside of your planned exercise activity. So if, whether that's like doing your run or like doing a strength training session, doing Zumba, whatever your choice of exercises, your planned activity is, everything you do outside of that, which can be things like gardening, housework, playing with the kids, like running up and down the stairs with loads of laundry, that type of thing. But if we talk about it in like practical terms for the people who are listening, walking is the easiest way to describe what NEAT is. Now, people don't think it's that important, but you are likely to burn more calories from what you do in your NEAT activities. So like going for an hour's walk than doing a strength training session. Now, strength training session has way more like sort of like benefits from a physiological standpoint. You know how it can help your mental health. Well, so can walking, but your mental health, it can help build lean muscle and help your metabolic load and all of that, those sort of things. But people underestimate how important NEAT is as part of the whole equation. Like, so I will like say to people, if you could get out and walk and like get off a few steps earlier of the subway or the bus, I know no one's working at the moment, going to work at the moment, or if you actually get out the house and go for a walk, which we're all able to do at the moment for an hour, chances are you've added another 300 calories to that bucket of like, you know, that could be the muffin that you really wanted. And I never like try and say to people, eat your way through the food, but it sort of adds to the fact that gives you a bit more grace. And we're looking for ways for you to be as healthy as you can. And if fat loss is the goal, this is a brilliant aid. And in fact, if you don't do it, you'll make the whole thing so much harder. So every day, women should move. Like, even when I was on the sofa, like, for 4 hours, I'm miserable, absolutely miserable, and I couldn't do anything, I sort of peeled myself off the sofa and went out every day for a walk. I'd go out walking and crying. I didn't care. Put a podcast on, like, listen to this podcast. And just because what we know happens is, on a cellular level, when you go out walking, one, in nature, it changes the way your brain processes everything. It helps release endorphins. It's brilliant on the joints. The blood flow gets going. Nutrients get flowing around your body. You literally will feel 100% better than you did when before you didn't want to go. You'll feel so much better when you come back, without a doubt. And even if it's really crappy weather, just get better clothes. Like, there's no reason not to do it. And I think that if I could, even if I didn't get anyone strength training ever again, which I want everyone to do, I would say, if you could move every day in a real purposeful way, your health will improve tenfold. And people's health markers change. Hypertension, cholesterol, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, all of, even osteoporosis to some small degree, can all be improved, or the burden can be lessened by walking every day.
I agree. And just reading it written down and reading some of the equations in the book, you know, I knew it anyway, but it really hammered it home. So thank you, because that's been a really good takeaway from me. I am going to try strength training as well.
What I wanted to do is give everybody an entry level to strength training. And ironically, I wrote it prior to the pandemic. The book's like 2 years old, but I did it with one set of dumbbells in your home, because the big thing for me is, when I talk to women who aren't my clients and they just reach out to me, is they don't want to do it because they're scared to walk into a gym, or they're overwhelmed with all of the exercises out there. So essentially, all I've done is create a very simplistic template. The exercises aren't crazy, but they shouldn't tickle either. You know, I want you to actually work hard. Like, you know, and we can do hard things. And I think that women are like, I've only got like 3 pound dumbbells. And I'm like, girl, I just saw you coming out of Asda with 20 bags of shopping. Yeah. Don't give me that drill.
It's true. Up your dumbbells and get strength training. Absolutely.
Yeah, work out with your Asda shopping bags. Honestly, yeah. If you don't only have small dumbbells.
Well, it's true. Because I live on a boat, it's hard for me to have much equipment. But I do have an awful lot of wood that needs moving, logs. So I'll just be log shifting. I'll be like
functional training at its best. I mean, the whole purpose of doing strength training is to make real life activities easier. Yeah. And so essentially that's what you're doing anyway. So yeah.
I just want to ask, because you're obviously from the Northeast, which I love that your accent is purely retained, but you're not in the Northeast, are you? You're in Houston in Texas. And you've been in, well, you were in Canada and now you're in America. You've been overseas for a long time. I just want to ask quickly if you can say, of course, you're in America, so it might be hard to judge, but where are we at, the UK and America, when it comes to menopause? Because obviously here there's a huge explosion, I think, at the minute of talking about menopause. Are we behind America? Are we ahead of America? Is there stuff we should be learning from the States? Or
it's really interesting, because I have had this conversation a number of times, and I actually have just contributed to a book by Diane Danzebrink, because she asked me the difference, as she, you know, specifically what's going on. And so the United States are way behind the UK. My book has done as well in the UK as it has in the US. It's crazy, purely because the conversation is on the BBC, it's on national media. I had a double page spread in the Mirror and the Mail and the Express, like, it was crazy. And it was like crickets over here. Nothing was happening over here. I got on one TV show with the book. And it's just, the conversation is like so muted. It's so difficult to have. And it still gets people rolling their eyes like, oh, here she goes again, moaning about menopause. And I'm like, I'm not moaning, actually. In fact, I wrote a book where I only moaned for a tiny bit because I wanted
very
to just
restrained moaning.
It was restrained.
You really kept a lid on it beautifully, Amanda.
Yeah, like I didn't want to just be a more another men or mourner. I wanted to be a solution driven person that could say women need access to healthcare over here and we don't have it. The healthcare system is a broken mess in the US. You either have really good insurance because you've got a good job because healthcare is linked to your employment, or you have a low paying job, or you don't work and you're on the government assisted insurance and you get zero help. Women are still getting turned away by their doctors who are not trained, gynecologists who have no menopause management training. And then in the meantime, the private clinics over here have just exploded. Unregulated hormones and pellet therapy and all of those type of things are epidemic. And so it's moving, but it's so much slower than the UK.
It's interesting you say that as well, because I always worry that everything gets so highly medicalized in America, and that, you know, drugs are so often the answer. And, you know, I would worry for the state of menopause in America because of that. Obviously, there are lots of medications that we should and could be taking that are good for us, but the scope for people to go, it's a pill, so I ought to take it. Where do you think in the US is on ageism? So, you know, especially if you look at, you know, American women on TV, which I don't get to see so much of, but you'll see more of, you know, this Botoxing and, you know, age resisting products and everyone's trussed up in their Spanx and everything. Do you think that ageism is stopping the menopause conversation?
It's really funny because, I mean, I actually see it in my local supermarket. I'm in Texas. I mean, it literally is like it was on Dallas. Like it's
plastic, I love that.
Plastic fantastic. Like, and so, I mean, I've tried to remove myself away from the judgmental conversation because I definitely was that person and I couldn't care less what people do to their faces or whatever, but I see it and I see it all the time, you know, like it's so easy to get like to resist the aging process. There's a big movement over here now, but I don't think it's like catapulted, you know, like embrace. I think the pandemic has helped embracing the gray, embracing the wrinkles and aging unapologetically. That like that's sort of like
people
my...
couldn't get to their Botox doctor.
That's probably what it was, right?
Couldn't get to the hairdresser.
But then, you know, I see it over here and I don't think it's muting the conversation because I do believe that women are desperate for help. And all of the like woo-woo information that was out there that was anti-HRT, and I'm not particularly pro-HRT, I'm pro-choice and information, right? I don't take HRT. Right. So there's that. But I just think that they're sick of the misinformation out there, of which there's lots. Everything is unregulated here in my world. So the health and wellness industry are like, oh, I'm a hormone specialist. No, you're not, darling. You're not an endocrinologist. So just shut up and stay in your lane. Like that drives me crazy. As far as like the looks, I mean, it's really hard for a woman to give up on her looks. And I hear that. I also look at the UK and see everybody with orange faces, fake tans and talons.
Yeah.
I actually have like the original Scouse brow and I'm like, I set the trend on that one. You know, my eyebrow game is strong, but I just think that this conversation falls outside of menopause and falls directly in the hands of media and our representation and our inability but from the media to show us as we truly are. They literally don't want us to get old. And then that ripples down into the workplace, into the health and wellness industry, into the medical industry. And so there's this resistance there for us to get old. And I'm like, why? Like, why? Where, like, I'm 50 now and it's not what I thought 50 would be like. We're a different generation of women that have invested time and energy in our health and wellness. And we're really demanding more answers now. We're demanding support and we're demanding to be heard. And yet the media doesn't seem to have kept up with that.
I hear you. Well, thank you.
My
so
little
much.
Soapbox.
Yeah. Do some steps while you're up on there. Listen, it's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast. The book is amazing. It's really eye-opening. I will let you know if I get round to doing the strength training. I'm just like, I've just finished reading it. So I'm like, I know I can do it. I know I need to do it. Yeah, you might have to keep emailing me and telling me to start.
You know, if I could give you one piece of advice, because you're a boat dweller, is that like, I'd already thought about, like, if my husband actually stops me being sick on a boat and I was able to exercise, what's the two pieces of equipment I would take? And I have three, and one would be a TRX, which is the suspension trainer straps, because right. they're so portable and small. You can strap them onto anything and they're brilliant. A sandbag, because they could be multi-purpose. And they're really hard, and you don't have to have them heavy because the sand shifts, so it makes it feel heavier. And a kettlebell. There you go. Three pieces of equipment and you're made, and they don't take up any room.
Okay, no excuses now then. I'm going to have to start. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Amanda Thebe.
Thank you, Rachel.
That was the excellent Amanda Thebe, author of Menopocalypse. You can find out more about Amanda on her website, fitandchips.com. Next week, we've got Caroline Harris on the podcast, curator of Emboldened, Menopause Conversations We All Need to Have.
Because it is a global issue, it's going to affect 50% of the world's population of those people who reach an age that they go through menopause. So it's a huge thing. It's a human rights issue.
And if you like the sound of that, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get yours. You can also get in touch and find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'd love to hear from you.